morning, everybody. Take a minute and pray. It is super fun having kids in the service. Jesus, thank you for this community. Thank you for a community that 160 plus kids call at their church home. What an honor and a privilege that is. Thank you for a community where we can come together week after week, day after day, as friends, as family, supporting each other, helping us get closer to you. Be with us this morning, Lord. Help us to sense your presence, to hear your voice, to know your goodness and your love for us. Amen. Okay, I came in this morning and it was freezing, and it's no longer freezing up here. For a number of reasons, Tom and I decided that we would home educate our children during their early years. We bless all our children. We love all our children. But we decided to home educate our children during their early years, and there was a lot that was great about that. We had a ton of really great experiences, but one of the costs was when our kids did start public school, it could be a little bit of an intimidating experience. And in particular, they weren't used to navigating the social dynamics that you can find in school. So they weren't necessarily up on how to understand what is cool or how to navigate alliances. Suddenly there's cliques and who's in and who's out and what does that mean. And one of my kids in particular had a rough start to his first year in school. It was in high school, and he was a freshman. And after a few hard days in the cafeteria where he felt left out at best, he decided that he would eat his lunch outside the cafeteria. He sat on a chair outside the cafeteria, and he read a book. And I think he read a book because he likes to read, and I think he read a book because maybe he thought that it made it look like I'm choosing to be out here because I want to read a book, not because there was some epic failure on my part or something that I couldn't make it on the inside. And of course, I felt terrible for this child of mine. I wanted the whole process of his making friends at school to be easier, and I hated, as a parent, thinking about the narrative that my son could be telling himself. And I would be picturing the cafeteria in my glorified picture. Every student is in the cafeteria, and they're all sitting around the tables, and they're all laughing, and they're all happy, and they all have perfect self-esteem, and girls are with girls, and boys with boys, and girls with girls, and boys, and whatever I just said. And everybody's happy, and there is my son outside the cafeteria reading his book. And of course, it was heartbreaking. Well, my son didn't really do anything that heroic during this season other than getting out of bed and going to school each day, which was somewhat of a challenge. He confronted his shyness, I suppose, as he began saying hi to people in the hallway, to other students who he recognized from his classes. And over the course of months, things began to change for my son. He started making friends. He started discovering who he was as a high schooler. Individual friends morphed into groups of friends until when it was time for my son to graduate. My son, who managed to keep his soul during high school, which sociologists say is hard for young people because of the constant pressure to compromise. But he ended up being voted the nicest kid in his graduating class. Well, recently, I've found myself in a couple situations that were really scary. And I was aware, as I was going through those situations, that there was nothing in me, that I wasn't doing anything that felt particularly heroic. And so I was lamenting about it with Jesus. And I'm saying, Jesus, I kind of feel wimpy. I'm in a situation that for me feels scary, and I don't feel like brave in any way. I don't feel like I'm doing anything heroic in any way. I just feel scared. And I felt like Jesus said to me, Adi, think of your son. Because sometimes courage is just staying in the game. So this morning I want to look at a Bible story with unlikely heroes who stayed in a game that they weren't really supposed to be in the first place, and who end up changing the whole game. And then we'll see what God has to say to us about the very real circumstances in our life. So our story is from the book of Numbers, chapter 27. The daughters of Zelophehad. So Zelophehad is the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh. So the daughters of Zelophehad belonged to the clans of Manasseh, sons of Joseph. The names of the daughters were Mahla, Noah, Hagla, Milcah, and Tirzah. They came forward and stood before Moses, Eleazar the priest, the leaders, and the whole assembly at the entrance to the tent of meeting and said, "Our father died in the wilderness. He was not among Korah's followers who banded together against the Lord, but he died for his own sin and left no sons." So in other words, he wasn't part of a rebellion that would have been looked badly upon, a rebellion against God. He died in some sort of natural way. And he had left no sons. "Why should our father's name disappear from his clan because he had no sons? Give us property among our father's relatives." Okay, so Zelophehad has died. He leaves behind five daughters. He has no sons. And the laws are clear in that day for the people of Israel. Sons can inherit land from their fathers, and daughters, not surprisingly, cannot. So Zelophehad's daughters are pretty much hung out to dry. And it's important for us to note here that this is the law that came from Moses. It came directly from the lawgiver himself, who is still alive, who is still in charge, who's standing right over here, and who is talking directly to God. This was not like, you know, actually, this can kind of go either way. Like, there was no gray area about this. It didn't require a discernment process. Daughters could not inherit land, period. Now, I don't know what I would have done in this situation. Likely, it wouldn't occur to me that I have any choice because I don't. That's why a law is a law. And it's not a suggestion or a guideline. And I'm a woman, and it's the ancient world, and I have no rights. I'm property. So there would not have been precedent for pushing back. That would have been unheard of. And I try to imagine what the conversation between these sisters would have been like. Maybe Mahla, the oldest, is freaking out. She's aware. She's saying, like, "I'm aware I'm responsible for my younger sisters. She knows the law. She obeys the law like her father. She obeys the law. And now she's despairing because what's going to happen?" And maybe Tirzah, the younger sister, sees her and she says, "Mahla, what's wrong? Why are you crying?" And maybe Tirzah is less of a rule keeper, and maybe she's more of a creative strategist type. And maybe she's thinking the reality is, we have nothing to lose. So maybe she throws out her idea and she says, "Let's go directly to Moses and let's frame things in a way that might get his attention, and let's make it about our name being carried on and about the tribe." And by now, all the sisters would be involved in this conversation. And I imagine there's a lot of discussion and there's heated argument because the stakes are high. On the one hand, right, just going to Moses, who is the leader of this newly formed free people, thousands of people, seems scary and risky. On the other hand, the law isn't fair, and it would mean that they have no inheritance in the promised land, and it would leave them penniless and destitute and helpless. And they're saying, we will become beggars. We might become prostitutes. So the sisters agree. They will go to Moses, but they're probably saying, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, what are we doing? Have we lost our minds? So the five of them, Mala, Noah, Hogla, Milcah, Tirzah, they file an appeal. They're essentially saying to Moses, to the priest, to the whole assembly, Moses, that law that you got while you were on the mountain with all the thunder and the lightning that scared the crud out of all of us, that law that you got directly from the hand of God, we think it's unfair. We think it needs to change. And what they say is, give us property among our father's relatives. Give us property. Right? This is not a polite request. This is a demand. And of course, we can all anticipate with the sisters what's going to happen. Right? They are going to be squashed. They'll be totally put in their place. We all know what happens when oppressed people try to have their voice, right? It doesn't work. And so I find myself, I kind of want to warn the sisters. Like, I'm a little older. I've lived in this world for a while. I kind of want to say, don't do it, ladies. Don't, it's not going to, this isn't going to end well. Like, I feel scared for you. Don't do it. And this had to be part of these young women's conversation. They had to be saying what they knew to be true, that the chances of their being heard are 1,000,000 to 1, that the chances of getting what they wanted are 1,000,000 to 1. The odds of us leaving this meeting unscathed, they're saying to themselves. I mean, they are in front of everyone, Moses, the priest, the leaders, and the whole assembly, is how it's described. It would be like Alice Paul and her cadre of suffragists going before the President of the United States and the U.S. Congress demanding the right to vote. But these young women have chosen to stay in the game. They say this is it. This is the only game in town. We're going for it. So our story goes on. So Moses brought their case before the Lord, verse 5. And the Lord said to him, what Zelophehad's daughters are saying is right. You must certainly give them property as an inheritance among their father's relatives and give their father's inheritance to them. Say to the Israelites, if a man dies and leaves no son, give his inheritance to his daughter. If he has no daughter, give his inheritance to his brothers. If he has no brothers, give his inheritance to his father's brothers. If his father has no brothers, give his inheritance to the nearest relative in his clan, that he may possess it. This is to have the force of the law for the Israelites, as the Lord commanded Moses. Now, we heard a lot of male pronouns just now, but the bottom line is God changed the law. God totally changed the law. Daughters can inherit land now, and before they could not. Moses hears the women. He brings their case before the Lord. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, the daughters of Zelophehad are right. These women are right. Change the law. This is kind of unfathomable, right? Last week we heard David interview four young girls who have been speaking out publicly, specifically talking to the school board about taking action against a school dress code that unfairly targets girls. And particularly, they said, girls of color. The girls talked to us about the importance of using their voice, of using our voices. Four essentially young, powerless girls going before a school board. They said of VIPs. Super impressive. It is unfathomable that five daughters with zero rights in the ancient world would change the mind of God and of Moses. And it's unfathomable that the story is written down and part of our sacred text. The NIV, that's the translation that I'm using, the New International Version. The commentator, most certainly a man, says this: the daughters of a man who had no son were concerned about their rights of inheritance and the preservation of their father's name in the land. Their action in approaching Moses, Eleazar, the leaders of the nation, was unprecedented. An act of courage and conviction. So what does this mean for us today, this morning? What is the game that we're invited to stay in as individuals and as a community? And are there times when we don't stay in a particular game? Often the Moseses that we're contending with today don't respond with humility of submitting our protests to God. So here's a few thoughts. Number one, we have to ask the question, what is our game or games? All of us have particular situations that we're in today, and some of those situations are by choice, some not. Dealing with our fraught relationships, contending with physical or mental illness, our jobs, our education, our losses. And of course, there are those of us today who, like the daughters in our story, are unfairly impacted by the laws of our land. The women in our story invite us to take time and name those things that will require something of us in order to go through the experience well. So we're talking about those areas of our life that aren't necessarily intuitive, that aren't necessarily easy for us to go through. So the first thing we do is we ask, what are our games? Number two, the women in our story stayed present and clear-minded enough to think through their options, to choose their risks, to stay together, and to remain in community. In other words, not to let this challenge, which was quite a challenge, right, to drive them apart, to come between them. Last week, we sang the lines of the song, "Prone to Wander, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I love. Take my heart, Lord, take and seal it for the courts above." Now, I connect with these lyrics every time we sing the song, because when life gets hard, when staying in the game that I find myself gets hard, I am prone to wander. I am prone to look for my options and my ways out. How do I get out of this? How can I figure out some way to not have to go through this thing? Because of this, I have practices in my life that tether me to peace. They create calm muscles in me the way that workouts create physical muscles. But the truth is, sometimes they get busy and I don't have time to do these practices. And then the crises hit in my life and I feel spiritually flabby. It's important to me to stay in the games that God has me in. And I feel like the more I learn in this life, about this life, the more I understand the world that we're living in, and the more I understand myself, the more challenging, actually, it becomes. Daily practices of prayer, of reflection, of meditation, don't just leave us feeling better on that day, but they change us. They strengthen us. They build well-trodden and familiar paths. So on that day, the women in our story invite us to intentionally do what it takes to stay present and calm and clear-minded. Number three, the women in our story chose not to accept the status quo or what they see as will be their destiny. They are imagining a different kind of future. They invite us to look at structures and systems in our world and to ask questions. They invite us to say our law privileges certain people. They invite us to look at inevitable outcomes and say, wait a minute. This doesn't make sense. I had the opportunity to speak with an amazing woman from our community this past week, a woman for whom the laws in our country have not historically served. And she told me a little bit about her story. And she said that after a lifetime of rough experience, she said she found herself about to be arrested again. And this woman chose at that moment not to accept the status quo. She said that she imagined a different kind of a future. And so she said to the officer, "You don't see me, and you don't understand." And the officer said, "Ma'am, I have to arrest you." And she said, "No, you don't see me, and you don't understand." And this went on back and forth for a little bit. And finally, somehow, her protest got through. And rather than being arrested, she was placed in a healing environment where she was invited to face the pain and injustice of her past, where she was invited to receive deep healing and where she could reclaim herself. And truthfully, we would all be blessed to hear this woman's stories and call her friend. The women, the daughters in our story, invite us to challenge the status quo and to reimagine our future. Number four, and it's important to continually ask, is this still what God has for me? So I don't want to spend too much time on this, but not every game out there is our game. We have to know ourselves, our limitations in any season, what our process of discernment is, so we end up in the games that make sense for us, where we have a choice. And finally, number five, the sisters in this story invite us to face down our fears, are more likely to go ahead despite them. So last week, David and Theo described a little bit of their involvement in a rally, protest, that 11 folks from Sanctuary participated in. I first learned about Poor People's Campaign from David. So as a church, we're always looking for folks to partner with in our communities. And David had been doing some exploring. And the more he learned about the Poor People's Campaign, the more he realized, I really like this, you guys. It's deeply spiritual. It's led by clergy, but it's very inclusive. The issues they care about are all the issues we care about, our poverty, our racism, our earth, our LGBTQ rights. As part of the nonviolent protest that Theo mentioned last week was an opportunity for civil disobedience, which was happening simultaneously in many states all over the country. Well, when David let us know that he would choose to be arrested if it came to that, Beth Faga and I decided that we would do the same thing as well. Now, I don't know how many of you have ever participated in risking arrest, but for Beth and I, this was new. We had not been in a protest before. We had certainly never put ourselves in a position to be arrested. Most of what either of us knew was from the civil rights movement, or from Rosa Parks, or many others like her, who said, no, I'm not going to the back of the bus, or no, I'm not leaving this lunch counter, or from the Freedom Riders. But the more we understood what we were protesting and why we were protesting it, the more convinced we became. But what I want to say is this. There are not two less likely candidates to get arrested than Beth and me. Now, I say this with permission. Beth knows every word that I'm saying. But it seems like people who get arrested should be brave, right? We were terrified the whole day, like through the speeches, in the rally, we're monitoring our anxiety. If we had a blood pressure cuff, we would have broken it. It was one of those situations where we were deeply committed to what we were doing and totally terrified. So in a few moments, I'll show you a video, and in the video, people are singing, "We Are Not Afraid," and all I'm thinking is, are you kidding? I'm totally afraid. I'm like off the charts, shaking in my boots, afraid. I am hoping I don't throw up on this state trooper or Beth, afraid. Theo mentioned last week there were probably a couple hundred people or so at the rally, and maybe 100 of us that piled into the governor's office and then spilled out in the hallway, many of whom were clergy. Out of them, 10 of us got put into custody. Now, Beth and I knew the whole time that we could change our minds. We kept asking each other, are you changing your mind? I don't know. Are you changing your mind? I'm not sure. I'm not doing it without you. Don't do it without me. You can't change your mind. Wait, I'm changing my mind. I'm not changing my mind. It was 10 till 5, and we know now it's our last chance to leave the governor's office, and we see many of the people who said that they were staying are now leaving, and so we're more nervous by this point. We looked at each other, but, I mean, we could barely make eye contact. We made our decision to stay. We held hands, and we waited. So here's a video of a little bit of that.
We are not afraid. We will stand for liberation, because we know how we will be. We are not afraid.
Here.
We are not afraid. We will stand for liberation, because we know how we were made. We are not afraid. We are not afraid. We will stand for liberation, because we know how we were made. We are not. Stand for
I have to say, my smiling was not happy smiling, but I do make jokes when I'm really scared, and the officer never thought that they were funny. He never laughed. I was like, note to self, don't make jokes when being arrested. It took Jesus saying to me that courage was staying in the game, that how freaked out we were internally. It was a moot point that sometimes just staying is enough. In the end, we were taken in custody. We were given citations and we were released. We don't have harrowing tales to tell, though it felt pretty harrowing to us. But all week, I called Beth and I said, oh my gosh, I feel proud of us. We believed in something, and we went for it. And in the process, we learned a lot. It was hopefully one of many opportunities to face down fear, and more importantly, you guys, to stand for what you and I believe in. The next time, I'll be prepared to belt out, "We Are Not Afraid," because I won't be referring to my emotion. I'll be referring to my trust that I'm exactly where I need to be and that that's enough. I'll close with this. Our story, our Bible story this morning, had a neat and happy ending. The women change God's mind. Moses holds his leadership with humility. Most of our invitations to stay in the game aren't quite as neat and tidy. They don't resolve in one request or one petition. Sometimes they do, but often we find ourselves more in situations more like the Israelites crying out to God for what seems like a long, long time. Over and over, we cry out for healing, healing for our bodies, healing for our relationships, healing for our nation, and healing for our land. But God's invitation to us this morning is the same as it was to my son those years ago. Just keep going to school. To the woman in our community, I have a different outcome for you. To Beth and to me, you guys can do it. I'm with you. To the young girls who went before a school board as they articulated to us, you have a voice. Use it. Amen. We're going to transition now to a time of communion and musical worship. The worship team can come forward. Let's stand. The The Lord Jesus, on the night he was betrayed, took the loaf of bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it. And he said, "This is my body that is for you. Do this in remembrance for me." And in the same way, he took the cup after supper, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes."